tired of running interference every time Blevins is a jackass to her. There's three or four who expressed interest. Rachel in Constantinople, etc. And they're all in DTAPs with multiple KCWs. Talk about it over dinner? MS. P.S. Merry Christmas.
Response from Lyons.
Stokes. 1. Bad form to call your boss a jackass on a company messaging system. 2. Merry Christmas. 3. I thought you were heading out of town to spend time with family. 4. We've never brought a historical forward in time before. Can we even do that?
From Stokes.
Tristan. 1. If we get to the point where said jackass is reading my personal messages to you, then we have bigger issues and we're all done here. 2. And Happy New Year. 3. Cancel the trip. Mom's showing up late tonight. We'll hang out at my place. Too much going on here. And Ersebet gets a little nutty around the holidays. 4. You're right that sending a historical forward is different from homing a doer back to their natural time and place, but Ersebet says it can be done. Especially if the sending witch has developed familiarity with the Odek by homing a lot of people there. We have, as of today, run 55 deeds in 1200 Constantinople. We've used 3 different KCWs to home all of our doers. One of them, Rachel, has done it 32 times, and Ersebet feels she has our Odek strongly dialed in. We should consider it. MS.
From Lyons.
On my way with the usual. Break out your finest chopsticks.
From Stokes.
Okay. But setting a knife and fork for E. She won't eat otherwise. MS.
Post by Mortimer Shore on General Odin Channel, 0357. Day 887. New Year's Day, Year 3.
Happy New Year, everyone. I'm still a little buzzed, heh, from the festivities at Oda-sensei and Rebecca's. But now that we're almost 4 whole hours into the new year, I wanted to buckle down to work and send this out. As we prepare to power up the Chronotron for real, T-minus 4 days and counting, huzzah, Dr. Oda recommended that I send out some informal layman's language on what exactly is a Chronotron. I'm pretty amped about this, so to speak, and really grateful that I've been able to move away from the sysadmin role. A big hand to the staff who's running all the stuff I used to manage, especially Gordon Healy, another MIT CSist who now gets asked all the questions about email servers. But hey, Gordy, I'm proof this place is all about job growth, LOL. So, just a reminder, I'm not qualified to explain why this works, because that's the physics part where I'm a bonehead. But here's a simplified take on how it works. The Chronotron is based on a theoretical model, which proposes that for the present-day universe that we all live in, there's not just one past, and not just several alternate pasts, but an infinite number of them. Similarly, this one single present also has an infinite number of possible futures. But our relationship to these infinite pasts and futures isn't random. Plausibility throws its weight around, per some freaky quantum mechanics stuff that Dr. Oda calls Feynman diagram history pachinko. If you're really interested in the details of that, check in with him in his spare time, and he will be happy to expound. The Kipus, quantum information processing units, that make up the Chronotron are capable of dealing with the infinite pasts as weighted by plausibility calculations in slit, something less than infinite time. They know how to renormalize per plausibility quotients, so that irrelevant pasts can be ignored and high-leverage pasts can be zeroed in on. Thanks to all the input from our fine team of in-house historians, it can sort out what leads to what, and what doesn't lead to what, with more accuracy than Google directing you to not-safe-for-work porn sites.
Dia Chronicle. Day 891. Early January, Year 3. In which the manifestly obvious takes us by surprise. the chronotron was ready to be turned on and used for the first time. During the year and a half that Dodo's R&D division, under Frank Oda, had been developing and testing the chronotron, the rest of us had been slowly building out the witch network through many DTAPs and recruiting HOSMAs, historical operations subject matter authorities, what any normal person would call professors, for Dork. We hadn't been conducting full-blown diachronic operations per se, but we'd been laying the groundwork, recruiting new doers with painstaking care, training them in languages and other skills, sending them on dry runs to various DTAPs just to break them in. The ODAC had gone through two complete redesigns. Four copies of that design had been constructed in the basement, with two others roughed in and ready to be finished as soon as there was a need for them. But there was no need, for we still only had a single witch, or, in the jargon of the agency, Muon. The exact numbers have flown from my memory, but on the day that we booted up the chronotron, our headcount looked something like this. Dork, of which I was in charge, and Listener, how often does one have the opportunity to say one works for the Dork of Dodo, comprised about 20 full-time HOSMAs, 5 support staff, and 100 part-time consultants, all security checked and sworn to secrecy, not to mention 5 full-time DorkCAD technicians, this being our cartographic and architectural database. One of the more colorful and active sub-departments was Dove, the Department of Violence's Ethnology, which was responsible for instructing doers in historical martial arts, as well as related skills, such as riding, armor, and making improvised weapons. This had expanded far beyond Mortimer Shore's early training sessions in the park. Under the leadership of Dr. Hilton Fuller, an Ivy League academic with a passion for historical martial arts, it now operated an in-house dojo, as well as a larger training and riding center outside of Boston. CCOD, headed up by Macy Stoll, had a headcount of nearly 100, many of whom seemed to be busy setting up other dodo facilities around the world. The department had 5 full-time medical professionals, as well as the usual complement of janitors, HR people, finance, IT, and the like. Its largest single sub-department was the redundantly named Diachronic Operations Security Operations under Major Isabel Sloan, who had been recruited sideways from a military police unit based in the Middle East. People in the know pronounced it DOSECOPS, but its acronym, DOSECOPS, inevitably led to new hires pronouncing it DOSECOPS and referring to individual members, who did actually resemble police officers, by the same name. R&D, in Frank Oda's purview, was the smallest department, some dozen computer scientists and physicists, a few programmers, and an administrator. Until this point, it had worked on the chronotron to the exclusion of all else, but Frank had some other ideas he was itching to work on. Finally, there was Diachronic Operations, under Tristan. This was the unit that employed all of the actual doers and sent them on missions. By this point, I think we had about 20 doers who were good to go, fully trained and checked out, plus a dozen more in the pipeline. More than half of them were fighters or striders. Those classes were easier to recruit, in a sense, because the military special forces units had already done the work for us of combing through the entire population and picking out the ones who were suited for the job. We just had to sift through their personnel records, looking for ones with the right combination of good teeth and unusual language aptitude. Lovers, closers, spies, sages, and the rest were underrepresented, simply because finding them was harder. But we had a few of them in each category. Enough, we felt, to make a dent in the universe once the chronotron came online and started telling us what we should actually do with them. All told, once General Frink's entourage from D.C. had been bundled in, some 200 people were present at the ceremony where we booted up the chronotron. And by extension, the Department of Diachronic Operations in its fully operational form. It was an event, the sort of thing Macy Stoll excelled at organizing. Erzsébet persuaded me to get a haircut and borrow one of her skirts. Tristan wore his dress uniform. Frank Oda put on a suit, then threw a white lab coat over it to conceal some moth holes that he didn't notice until he put it on. Even Mortimer found a necktie and a pair of leather shoes. Merely getting all of those people into the building without causing a public spectacle required some planning. We were still operating out of the same dingy, nondescript industrial building in Cambridge. Outwardly, this hadn't changed at all. It still sported the same graffiti tags and vinyl window shades as when I'd first seen it 2.5 years ago. People in the neighborhood, when they noticed it at all, shook their heads and wondered when some real estate developer would snap it up and turn it into a high-tech office building. To hide the fact that more than 100 people were going in and out of it every day, Macy's facilities team had built half a dozen secret entrances connected to neighboring structures by tunnels. We were about a block away from the river, and so we also made use of some utility passages connecting to public works facilities in the Greenbelt. When General Frink arrived, he was in the back seat of a small SUV that was completely nondescript, save for the fact that its rear windows were darkened, lest some pedestrian at a stoplight look in and recognize the face of the Director of National Intelligence. The Chronotron itself was not physically that large, but the space in which Frank and his team had built it was obstructed and complicated by the requirements of ventilation and power. Between the Odex in the basement, which still had to be jacketed in liquid helium, and the Kipus on the second floor, which also ran at super cold temperatures, this building was one of the largest cryogenic facilities in New England. A large fraction of its interior volume was set aside for tankage, insulation, ducting, and safety equipment. Consequently, we didn't have anything like enough room for 200 people in the actual Chronotron room, which was up on the second floor. The only people physically present were General Frink, Dr. Rudge, a few of their top aides, Blevins, the department heads, including yours truly as the head of Dork, and some of Frank's senior geeks. Everyone else watched it from their offices or the cafeteria via live stream. We'd actually had a small celebration of our own at the Odas beforehand. Just the original quintet, plus Mortimer Shore, of whom both Odas were very fond. By unspoken agreement, we had always shielded Mortimer from too much information about Dodo's high-level political dysfunction, though I often wondered if he used his sys-admin privileges to eavesdrop on some of our internal disputes. On this particular morning, as I looked at his beaming face, it didn't seem likely. Mortimer just thought it was cool that the big kids had invited him into the sandbox. Then we'd all piled into Frank's Volvo and gone to the office. General Frank showed up 20 minutes later, right on schedule, and toured the facility with Blevins at his elbow, ending up in the Chronotron control room, where there was a great deal of fuss over the powering on and the booting up of the machine. As we had actually been beta testing it for several weeks, this was largely ceremonial, but Oda Sensei still looked flushed with pleasure, and I did not begrudge him the moment. He switched on the Chronotron. Actually, it had been on more often than it had been off over the past several weeks, and it was, in fact, already running, so all he was really doing was turning on a fancy workstation that was connected to it. But that's ceremony for you. As a grid of flat panel screens came alive with scrolling text windows and dancing infographics, everyone clapped, and some of the coders hooted. Frank congratulated Oda Sensei heartily, Blevins almost as heartily, and then Tristan, Erzsébet, and myself, with little more than civil courtesy. We were getting used to this, although in truth, it pissed me off. It saddened me. Adjacent to the control room proper was a secure conference room, equipped with all manner of screens and VR and AR displays, where the results of its analyses could be reviewed and cross-correlated with maps, historical timelines, and diagrams of Dodo's network of safe houses and KCWs. We filed into it once the Chronotron had been turned on and received a briefing from Blevins on the projected first few months of Dodo's operations. These focused on what we were calling the Constantinople Theater. The Constantinople Theater was a broad canvas of safe houses and planned deeds, all having to do with limiting Russia's power in the Balkans and the Black Sea. This was not to be done in an invasive manner that would alter any of that area's endlessly turbulent history, but in a subtle way, to ensure a lack of Russian hegemony in the future. This included, of course, massaging the boundaries of the East-West Schism of the Church. But there was far more to it than that. Hundreds of discrete deeds were encompassed in this plan. We did not yet have all the resources required to accomplish them, but we knew what the first four or five gambits were supposed to be. And so today, we would move en masse directly from the Chronotron down to Odek Row to send Tristan off on the first one. I say supposed to be, because Robert Burns was right on the money about best laid plans. As if in a medieval street festival, our clutch of officials, aides, geeks, and department heads followed Blevins, Rudge, and Frank down the hallway and staircase to the basement, and were joined along the way by additional historians, doers, office workers, and techies, emerging from the spaces where they had been watching the live stream. The basement level had room to accommodate a few more spectators. Erzabet, decked out as only she could deck herself out, awaited us. Odek Row looked more like a medical facility than a magical teleportation center. This was because of the need to preserve strict epidemiological precautions. We'd improvised a working decontamination suite around the first Odek, of course, but the more recent influx of funding and expertise had given us the resources to do it right. The entire basement was cut in half by a wall of glass. On the other side of it, as we came in, was the biocontainment zone, subdivided into discrete isolation zones for each of the Odeks. They all shared some plumbing in the form of the sterilizing showers, human car washes in Tristan's description, that all doers passed through, en route to and from the Odeks, and the air filtration systems that ensured not even a virus could pass across the barrier. A fully equipped medical suite, sort of a compact trauma center, was tucked away in one corner. It was equipped with X-ray machines and an operating room so that injured doers could be treated on-site, immediately, and secretly. Next to that was a two-bed recovery ward. Compared to all of that, the Odeks themselves, the four that were up and running, and the two that were only roughed in, occupied only a small footprint. They were cylindrical rooms, just big enough on the inside for the sending witch and the doer, larger on the outside because of the thickness of the cryogenic jackets and electronic systems. Tristan, who was en route to 1203 Constantinople on Varangian guard duty, had slipped out of the conference room early, come downstairs, and passed through the airlock into the biocontainment zone. By the time we arrived, he had gone through the showers and was undergoing other decontamination procedures that my current Victorian sensibilities forbid me from discussing on the page. The crowd of dignitaries and support staff tumbled like unmilled corn into the space on the dirty side of the glass wall. General Frink was positioned in direct view of Odek Number 3 and the pre- and post-deed bioequipment surrounding it. Oda-sensei was just off to Frink's side, checking the Odek's status through a touchscreen interface. We'd used all four of the finished Odek sporadically, just to make sure they all worked. It was expensive to keep them running because of the need for liquid helium and electrical power. Until today, Dodo hadn't had the budget, and we hadn't needed them frequently enough to justify leaving them on. With the new year and the powering on of the Chronotron, this had all changed. Over the holiday weekend, the technicians had been chilling the whole system down to just above absolute zero and running tests on the electronics. From now on, it would stay on 24/7. This meant keeping the doors shut to limit heat loss and the excess usage of energy and cryogenic fluids. When we arrived that morning, the door to Odek Number 3 was decorated with a red ribbon tied into a bow. For the schedule called for us to kill time with another ribbon-cutting ceremony as Tristan completed his preparations. Blevins droned on, While Ersebet went through the airlock and changed into a disposable bunny suit and surgical mask, these were standard procedures needed to prevent recontaminating Tristan during the moments that they would be standing together in the ODEC. She emerged in the space between the glass wall and the door to ODEC number 3 and picked up a sword that was waiting for her on a table. It was a sharp one, a Hungarian saber. Mortimer had sourced it from eBay and honed it until it could slice through a handkerchief in midair. Ersebet had been training with it, enough that she could swing it without killing herself. At a signal from Frank, she raised it above her head and drew it down through the ribbon, severing it in one quick motion. At the same moment, Frank whacked the Enter key on his keyboard, executing a command that made all the lights come on. ODEX number 1 through number 4 had been officially powered up. A round of applause swept through the crowd on the dirty side. At the same moment, Tristan finally emerged, wrapped in a sterile paper jumpsuit. This created the amusing impression that he was a character in a sitcom who had just made his entrance on the set and was getting a round of applause from the audience. He saluted General Frink through the glass wall. Frink saluted back. Tristan and Ersebet moved toward the ODEC door. The crowd on the dirty side pressed forward, trying to find space along the glass wall. For many of these people, it would be the first time they saw the ODEC actually in use. There'd be nothing really to see, of course, except that two people would go in and only one would come out. Frank had switched on an audio link so that he could talk to Ersebet and Tristan. Standing near him, I could hear their voices through the tinny little speakers built into the monitor. Tristan turned toward ODEC number 3 and reached for the button that would cause it to open its door. Just before his hand touched it, there was a pounding from within and a muffled scream. Tristan and Ersebet glanced at each other with concern. "Open it!" I said urgently, but Tristan was already mashing the button. As the door hissed open, a naked young woman tumbled out of the ODEC, clutching her head and wailing with fear. As she curled up protectively, her wordless hysteria was interspersed with a few hyperventilated phrases of medieval-era Hebrew. Tristan sidestepped and pulled a hospital gown from a rack of them hanging nearby. He tossed the gown on top of the hysterical girl, like a man throwing a blanket on a fire. Ersebet elbowed him away and adjusted the gown for modesty. Nudging Frank away from the control panel, I spoke firmly in Hebrew. "You're safe. You are among friends. There is no need to be frightened." Relief at hearing her own language made her catch her breath. Pulling the gown around her body, she rose to a kneeling position and stared about the place, wide-eyed. Tristan dropped to one knee and pointed toward me. I waved to her and caught her eye. "You are safe," I repeated. And then, rifling through my mental roster, maintained eye contact. "Are you Rachel, from Pera, Constantinople? Daughter of Avraham? Is that who you are?" Clutching the gown to her front, she rose to her feet and padded over toward me. For a moment, I was afraid she'd walk straight into the glass wall, but Ersebet put a restraining hand on her shoulder, and Tristan darted ahead and rapped on the glass with his knuckles. She slowed as she approached, and stopped with her face only inches from mine. "Yes." She turned her head and glanced around the space, not to the ODEC itself, the open door of which was just behind her, but around at the control panel and the scores of curious faces, in what must have been extremely curious forms of dress. She gasped. Electric cables, fluorescent lights, plastic chairs. Every single thing in that room, other than the biological reality of other human beings, was utterly alien to her. Her eyes opened so wide, I could see the whites all around the iris. I thought for a moment she would faint. Instead, she erupted into giggles.
"Ladies and gentlemen," Tristan announced, "looks like we've got ourselves another witch."
Part 4.
Incident Report. Author, Rebecca East Oda. Subject, Rachel Bat Avraham. Unauthorized ODEC use. Theater, Sea Cod. Operation, Ribbon Cutting Ceremony. DTAP, Cambridge, Massachusetts, present day. Filed, day 896, early January, year 3. Summary. At 11:21:16 of day 891, the subject, Rachel Bat Avraham, a KCW from the circa 1200 Constantinople DTAP, was sent from there to ODAC number 3 and materialized in normal physical condition. She was issued clothing and placed under observation in the medical isolation facility adjoining ODEC Row. She was debriefed in Hebrew and in Greek by Dr. Stokes, head of DORC, and Dr. Lingus, in-house Byzantine Greek Hosma, respectively. Initial briefing focused on two topics of immediate concern, namely, 1. Whether any more surprise visitors from 1200 Constantinople were to be expected, and 2. The importance of immediate medical procedures needed to protect subject from our diseases and vice versa. As precautions in the meantime, Dr. Oda had shut down all 4 operational ODECs, and ODEC Row had been placed under biocontainment lockdown. Upon receipt of verbal consent from subject, medical staff began administration of inoculations required to protect subject from modern diseases, to which she is not likely to have immunity, and collected samples, swabs, blood, urine, feces, for analysis of possible historical disease agents. Upon examination, subject had fully healed scars indicative of a past encounter with smallpox, suggesting that no active virus-shedding infection was in progress. Subsequent laboratory analysis detected low levels of intestinal parasites and gut flora of a potentially contagious nature. These were eradicated through orally administered medications, and the subject given a clean bill of health following 4 days of analysis and treatment. The inoculation protocols are scheduled to continue for another 2 weeks, whereupon subject will be cleared to emerge from biocontainment and mingle with the general population. Psychologically, subject appears normal, other than some natural disorientation. Results of debriefing. Subject is a 17-year-old resident of Pera, the Jewish neighborhood lying across the Golden Horn from Constantinople proper. She is one of a small network of KCWs recruited by Dodo and used extensively for deeds conducted during the last 2 years while laying the groundwork for full-scale diachronic operations slated to commence immediately. She is well known to our doers, who from the very beginning have commented on her marked curiosity about our time and place, and her frequently voiced desire to travel into the future and join us. She was able to reach ODEC number 3 through the assistance of her mother, another KCW in Constantinople, who agreed to carry out the sending. Until this incident occurred, we had not envisioned that a security breach of this nature was a realistic threat. 1. Sending by a historical witch into her own future was considered extremely difficult. 2. There was no place in the present day where magic worked, save in the confines of an up-and-running ODEC. Since we didn't leave the ODECs up-and-running, the sending witch had no fixed target to aim at. Obviously, these 2 assumptions are no longer valid. 1. Our KCWs in 1200 Constantinople have had so much practice homing our doers that they seem to have developed a feel for how to access the modern Boston DTAP. 2. The policy just inaugurated of leaving the ODEX running 24/7 has given the sending witch a much broader and more stable target to aim at. During her debriefing, Subject admitted that she had become aware of the new ODEX and the always-on policy slated to go into force at the beginning of the new year. This leakage of information was not the result of one specific disclosure by one specific doer, but rather a pattern of information that she had assembled through numerous conversations with various doers. In addition, it appears that Subject, along with many other witches, has the ability to extract information from nearby persons through non-verbal techniques. That, combined with Subject's intense curiosity and drive to escape what she sees as the stifling confines of a traditional medieval Jewish household, led to her devising the plan that led to her materializing in ODEC number 3. General remarks. Subject is beginning to learn modern English and is rapidly becoming familiar and comfortable with modern technology, conveniences, etc. It will be some time before she can move about freely in modern society without supervision, however. Nothing in principle stands in the way of her doing so. It should go without saying that she carries in her head classified secrets that can never be divulged to the modern world at large. Likewise, if she were to return to her place of origin and divulge information about the future, or attempt to alter the reality of that DTAP in a heavy-handed manner, diachronic shear would likely result. For her own protection, she will remain in biological isolation for another 2 weeks. But after that, top-level direction will be needed in order to determine her fate.
From Lieutenant General Octavian K. Frank to Dr. Roger Blevins. Day 900, mid-January, Year 3.
Blev, I was perusing Mrs. East Otis' report on the recent incident and came across something toward the end of it that, to put it mildly, startled me. Ms. Bat Avraham has the ability to extract information from nearby persons through nonverbal techniques. Am I to understand that she is a mind reader, and that other witches have the same ability? If so, then this document is an extraordinary example of what is referred to in the journalism business as burying the lead. Yours in consternation and amusement, Aki.
From Dr. Roger Blevins to Lieutenant General Octavian K. Frank. Day 902.
Aki, I too noticed the passage you referred to in your letter, and was doing some investigation before reporting further. I would recommend against use of any such pulp novel terminology as mind-reading, but in short, it does appear that many witches have enhanced skills around sensing others' mental states and manipulating same. Of course, like any other magical technique, it can only be used in an ODEC or in a pre-1851 DTAP. In a larger sense, this is not a surprise. For reasons I needn't belabor to you, Dodo has focused on one and only one form of magic, sending people to other DTAPs. But magic has many other possible uses. Making an analogy to electricity, it's as if Thomas Edison devoted his entire career to the development of washing machines, but never put any effort into light bulbs, elevators, or the myriad other applications that surround us today. We know perfectly well that witches could perform other kinds of magic. We just haven't put any resources into it yet. Blev.
Post by Lieutenant General Octavian K. Frank to Dr. Roger Blevins on Private Odin Channel. Day 903.
Blev, I'm moving this over to the secure messaging system for efficiency's sake. I got your letter. To put it bluntly, exploitation of the sending type of magic has ballooned into an enormously expensive and cumbersome operation. All worth it, I'm sure, not suggesting that the taxpayers' money is in any way misspent on ODECs and so on, but now that we have all of that apparatus up and running, we need to look for other opportunities to make the most of it. It didn't escape my notice that you mentioned the possibility of manipulating others' mental states as something witches could do. Let's drill down on that.
Response from Dr. Blevins.
In a sense, it's almost common knowledge, Aki. Historically, witches were feared and mistrusted for just such abilities. Where do you think the term bewitched originated from? We haven't put much effort into this because it only works in an Odek, and it's hard to imagine a practical application of such techniques, which depend on getting the subject into a cryogenically isolated telephone booth in a basement in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Also, we only have one witch.
From Lieutenant General Frank.
Now we have two, and we pretty much own Rachel Bat-Avraham. We can't very well just let her wander around free. If she came forward, it means others can do likewise. Let's get more witches, and let's put them to work. I take your point about the Odek. Why can't we make these things smaller, more portable? That would make their use for psyops far more feasible.
From Dr. Blevins.
As to your first point, we've been contemplating such a program for a long time, which is why we built so many Odeks. I'll put my foot on the gas, and I'll spread the word to the department heads. As to your second, my understanding is that they are impossibly cumbersome because of the cryogenics. But Dr. Oda is now surplus personnel since he finished the chronotron. I'll try to draw him out on the topic without tipping our hand.
Follow-up from Dr. Blevins a day later.
Aki, I had coffee with Dr. Oda, framed as a conversation about his future at Dodo. We had contemplated moving him to emeritus status to get him out of the way without sending his troublesome wife into a rage. In that capacity, he would have the freedom to explore independent research projects as long as they were relevant to Dodo's mission. Without any prompting from me, he mentioned that he had ideas on building an Odek capable of working at non-cryogenic temperatures. The technical details are over my head, but apparently it has to do with room temperature superconductors and certain advances in computer processing power that he has been tracking. Sounds like this could possibly lead to a portable Odek, and if so, we could redirect resources from diachronic travel to psyops. Unless you say otherwise before close of business today, I'll slide him over to the new role and encourage him to pursue the idea. Blev.
Post by Macy Stoll on All Employees Odin Channel. Day 905.
Everyone, Dr. Blevins is extremely busy just now, but has asked me to reach out in this forum and shine a light on some of the confusion and resulting rumors that have surrounded the recent arrival of Rachel Bat-Avraham. To clarify, Rachel's arrival was a planned event, not a security breach. There was indeed some surprise and confusion around the exact timing, which is why some of you may have noticed startled expressions on the faces of Lieutenant Colonel Lyons and Ms. Carpety. Rachel was scheduled to be sent forward to Odek No. 3 on a different date in the near future, as part of a planned program of activities for which Dr. Blevins has been laying the groundwork for some months now. Because of some understandable confusion around calendars, Julian versus Gregorian, the sending KCW in 1200 Constantinople did it on the wrong day, and so Rachel showed up ahead of schedule. Now that the cat's out of the bag, Dr. Blevins has asked me to let everyone know that Rachel is just the first in a series of anachrons, which is a term we will be applying to colleagues from earlier historical epochs who will be coming forward to present-day Boston and other Dodo sites to collaborate with us. The exact policy is still being formulated, but we anticipate recruiting anachrons in the following general categories. KCWs, such as Rachel, who can help Erzabet handle the anticipated uptick in demand for sending personnel to various DTAPs. Subject matter authorities, such as people who know how to speak a particular dialect or fight in a particular martial arts system for which we don't have modern-day expertise. These can serve as valuable adjuncts to the existing DORC staff.
evacuees who must be brought forward for tactical reasons, typically to avoid the possibility of diachronic shear. This might happen in the event of a security breach, leading to a situation where someone knew too much about their future. The above is not the definitive list. The full policy document is still being drawn up. Soon, Rachel will be cleared by our medical staff to mingle with the general population. And when that happens, I know you'll all join me in making her feel as welcome as possible in her new home and era.
Excerpt from transcript of interview between Dr. Melisande Stokes and Rachel Bot Avraham. Day 904, Day 13 of RBA's medical quarantine. Note, conversation took place in Hebrew, translated into English.
You're looking stronger today. Dr. Srinivasan told me you ate all of the chicken soup.
My shoulder, vaccine injection site, is no longer hurting, and the chills have stopped. Yes, I feel better, but still weak.
Would you like me to tell Dr. Srinivasan about your feeling of weakness? Perhaps he should know about it.
No, he cannot help.
Why do you say that? Modern medicine can do things that would surprise you.
This I understand. I have seen it with my own eyes. But my feeling of weakness is not the kind of thing that a doctor would understand or know how to fix. If you let me go into the Odek, I would feel strong again.
Because you could do magic there.
Yes, of course. You, non-magical persons, don't understand. You think that witches do magic only at certain times, when we perform a spell such as sending. Actually, we are doing it a little bit every moment, even when we are sleeping.
I've heard similar things from Ersebet. Only when she is in the Odek does she feel completely herself.
I can't wait to learn better English so that I can talk more to Ersebet.
The computer can help you learn some basic parts of the language. And when you get out of quarantine, you'll learn faster.
I have been reading the computer.
That's what Mortimer told me.
Who is Mortimer?
You haven't met him. He is one of the people who helps make the computers work.
How does he know that I have been reading the computer?
Do you remember our conversation the other day about how the computers are linked together in a network?
Yes, of course. A little bit like the network of strands.
A little bit, yes. Well, because of this, it's possible for someone like Mortimer, who is on a different computer in a different place, to see what you have been reading. And he tells me that you've been looking at Wikipedia in both Hebrew and Greek.
The Hebrew hasn't changed as much. There are many new words, of course, but I can learn those. The Greek has changed more. I can read both of them, anyway.
What have you been reading?
The future of Constantinople.
You mean the history?
To you, yes. But to me, it is the future. I was reading about the Fourth Crusade.
To you, that would be only a few weeks in the future.
You know about it?
Yes. As you know, we had been quite interested in that DTaP, and so I've read many historical accounts.
Then perhaps you can tell me what happens to the Jews of Pera after the Crusaders cross the Bosporus and attack Galata Tower. We live right in the shadow of the tower.
There is no written documentation about that directly, but related documents point to the Jewish community having dispersed without incident. Probably in response to the Catholic presence.
In the Levant, Catholics slaughtered legions of us. Are they going to slaughter my family? I must go back and warn them and tell them to leave before the trouble starts.
I'm sure they don't slaughter your family, Rachel. something else happened. Your family and everyone else, they must have just chosen to leave, without incident, or it would be recorded somewhere, right? With the Jews, everything bad is always recorded.
So, is everything good?
No, just the miracles. So, there are no miracles, but there's no slaughter.
I should warn them.
You chose to leave them, Rachel. You cannot leap back and forth between D-taps.
Why not? From how you have described Dodo, that is the whole point, leaping back and forth.
We follow instructions on what to do and not to do, and never for personal reasons. It is always in the interest of the work. Otherwise, things get complicated. When we started speaking 2 weeks ago, you had to agree to stay in this D-tap before I could tell you anything. You remember that, don't you?
Oh, of course, and I'm very happy to be here. It is so much better, even than the most exciting magic my grandmother's ever did. It is amazing. And all of you seem to take it in stride, even Elizabeth. It is all so wonderful, and everyone is kind to me. And it's such fun to see how everyone is clothed, and I cannot wait until I can try all the food, and this medicine is better than magic. If I were this sick at home, I would never be so recovered in 3 days. All these, what are they called, inoculations?
Inoculations and vaccinations. And that bag up there that's attached to the tube that goes into your arm? That has some medicine that's making you better faster.
Yes, easier than magic. I do not like the hum of the electricity, but Elizabeth says I will get used to it. And so I cannot imagine even heaven would be so wondrous as this.
Then I hope you are at peace with staying here and helping us. Please trust that your family will be safe without your assistance.
Very well. How can I help, once I have adjusted to being here?
The role of witches, here and now, is to send agents back in time to different D-taps.
I remember. I had no idea the world was so enormous.
Yes, even for us, with all our knowledge, it is a remarkable thing to contemplate. So you send us back in time, and we do things, very subtle little things, to prevent undesirable situations from happening. You don't need to worry about what those are. That's somebody else's responsibility. You just need to perform the magic of sending them back in time.
Very well. That's easy enough. What else?
That's all.
That's all?
Yes.
You mean that's all Elizabeth does every day? She just sends people. Why don't you use her other magic?
We have not found other useful applications for magic in today's world.
What? How is that possible? It's magic. Magic is always useful. That is like saying, you have no useful application for the sun because you found this electricity thing.
You yourself noted how remarkable life is now, that in many ways it is even better than magic.
It's better in a different way. It's not better than not having magic at all.
Because magic stopped in 1851, we became accustomed to living without it.
So, Elizabeth, all she ever does is send people?
Yes.
No wonder she's so grumpy. That must be very, very dull after a while.
It's her work.
I have never heard of a single witch in the history of the world who just had to do the exact same thing over and over and over again. That sounds terrible. The Lord would never subject anyone to such treatment. Even when we were slaves in Egypt, we had more variety to our tasks than that.
Are you saying you do not wish to have the work?
I want to have something else to do as well. I am an excellent witch, but I am also skilled at many other things. I can bake bread, and I am a superb seamstress. Perhaps I can spend some time sending people and some time baking challah.
I will talk to Dr. Blevins about your suggestion. I like it. Perhaps it would help Ersebet if she also had a pastime.
No, not a pastime. Something real. Something useful. I have met many people in this fortress now, but not a single baker.
We don't have enough observant Jews on staff to require that we keep challah on hand.
Forget challah, then. I wish to learn how to make those delicious, sweet, round things that Tristan has brought into the fortress, with the brightly colored bits on them. If I could spend some time baking those, then I would not mind if my magic work consists only of scenting.
I'll talk to Dr. Blevins.
Post by Dr. Roger Blevins on Announcements Odin Channel. Day 915, late January, year 3.
Effective immediately, Dr. Frank Oda has been promoted to Scientist Emeritus. In this new role, Dr. Oda will be unburdened from the day-to-day responsibilities of running Dodo's R&D department and will enjoy the freedom to pursue advanced research projects that have been back-burnered until now during his months of hard work on the Chronotron. Please congratulate him if you should encounter him around the facility. Macy Stoll has already tasked HR with recruiting or promoting a replacement for Dr. Oda as head of the R&D department. In the interim, Dr. Oda will remain in place as acting head and assign department staff to various tasks as appropriate.
Journal entry of Rebecca East Oda.
January 30th. Temperature, 29 degrees Fahrenheit. Damp, slight northeast breeze. Barometer steady. More firewood delivered and stacked. Using area of garden that was dug up for Bay Psalm book. 18 months later, soil has still not recovered. Expecting snowdrops soon. Yesterday afternoon, Tristan, Melisande, and Ersebet drove to the house with the new witch, Rachel, who will be lodging with us until appropriate quarters can be determined for her. A tiny, wide-eyed thing, looking like a rag doll in a dress that Ersebet picked out for her during a raid on Newbury Street. Predictably, there was disagreement about logistics. Tristan wanted Ersebet to return to the office to continue to send people. They have quite the schedule there now, and are working her almost to exhaustion. He argued that Melisande is the only one who speaks medieval Hebrew, and therefore Mel should stay with Rachel. "We will both stay with her," said Ersebet. "I was on hold," with air quotes, "for more than a century. You can be on hold for overnight." "Ersebet, you can't even talk to her. What's the good of your staying?" "I will talk to her through Melisande," Ersebet said in her so-there tone. "Do you know how long it has been since I have had another witch to talk to?" Ersebet made a mock surprise face. "Why, of course you do. You know exactly how long it has been. So you will give me this. If you refuse, I will understandably go on strike, which I would have done months ago if I were not so exceptionally generous and patient. I am giving you an opportunity not to force me to go on strike." Have been coaching her on her communication skills. Clearly mixed results. Tristan nodded. "Fine," he said. "You'll return at 1300 hours tomorrow." She rolled her eyes. "This is not an army barracks. I will return at 1 o'clock in the afternoon." "Major Sloan has vectored a couple of DOSECOPs to the house to keep an eye on things," said Tristan to me now. "They're on their way here." "Ah, Absolutely not, I said. She's not a criminal or a fugitive. It's about security, said Tristan. Felix, Mel suggested quickly. Rachel knows Felix from her native DTAP. He's between deeds. He's not technically a guard, but he's qualified. In fact, he's overqualified. Surely you can arm him and have him bunk in the dining room. A glance at me. Would that be all right? Only because Rachel knows him, I said. Being a den mother to wayward witches is not in my job description, and I will not play along if it requires armed men in my living room. Tristan's jaw worked silently for a few moments. I knew what he was thinking. It's not your living room anymore. It belongs to the East House Trust. But he had the good grace not to say this out loud. He called off the two guards, placed a call to Felix, and left. I confess I was surprised and touched by Erzabeth's cosseting young Rachel. Speaking to her through Millicent, she insisted Rachel spend the time giving vent to how very different and disorienting it is here. Millicent, translating, most of the English to Hebrew being some form of, I know, isn't it awful? I don't know what's worse, to have it happen all at once as with you, or to have it happen with gradual inevitability as with me.
Diachronicle. Day 1800. Summer, year 5. In which the zenith becomes our new normal. I have but 18 days left before the solar eclipse, and there is far too much to cover in what time is left to me. I am more desperate than ever not to be stuck here for fucking... forever. Therefore, I shall resort to a compendious depiction of the next phase of Dodo's existence. 2.5 years passed. Every day I rose and went to work. Many times I was sent back to various DTAPs to perform missions. A lot happened, in other words. And yet those 2.5 years flew by so quickly that when it was over, it felt as if some witch had sent me into the future. The value of the chronotron exceeded all expectations. With it at our disposal, we were close to gods in our omniscience. Over the course of those dazzling years, Dodo expanded beyond anything even Tristan could have imagined that afternoon when he took me to coffee. We expanded both in our own DTAP and also throughout history. In the 21st century, we built training and research centers all over the globe, with ODEC-equipped facilities in Europe, the Middle East, and Japan. To guarantee the most authentic training, we lured experts in certain fields of importance to us forward through time. Our fighters scrimmaged in top-secret dojos with Roman legionaries, Viking berserkers, and samurai. Their training gear was wrought by armorers of ages past, brought forward to toil in air-conditioned smithies. Per Tristan's early joke to me years earlier, I did indeed have a chance, once, to practice my conversational Sumerian with an actual Sumerian. We could not bring people forward from the past willy-nilly, of course. Strict principles around anachrons were codified, with each one being personally approved by Blevins. Generally, it was safer for a doer to train in a DTAP and bring that knowledge back to us than it was to bring somebody forward, which would then oblige us to spend time, energy, and medical and psychological resources on keeping them from losing their shit. On keeping them from having a difficult time adjusting to modernity, however carefully we tried to shield them. Our epidemiology unit ran around the clock, checking samples and improving our vaccination protocols. Most of the early anachrons were witches. Erzabeth, to our surprise, did not fly the coop once she'd been made redundant. She rather adopted the air of Cleopatra and made it clear, to them and to us, that she was now the Alpha Witch. None of the other witches could ever possibly know as much as she did about the 21st century or about Dodo's real missions. Likewise, none of us could possibly know how to behave appropriately with the new witches. She maintained all of her charismatic, narcissistic bitchiness. All of her prepossessing fierceness. but she became, in effect, the den mother of Weird Sisters. Frank and Rebecca's home couldn't hold them all, so Dodo purchased a big old house elsewhere in Cambridge, rigged it up with all kinds of security hardware,